Put that coffee down. Coffee's for closers only.
This is a Character Animation Bootcamp private class podcast, a cavalcade of character animation wisdom for your cranium. Just about everybody in the animation and motion graphics industry is aware of the terrific work done at Buck. And we were lucky enough to get to chat with two of Buck's artists, Chad Colby and Justin Laws. And we were particularly interested in talking to them because they both come from very different backgrounds in terms of their relationships to character animation. And we also wanted to speak to them because of their association with Buck, which does a lot of beautiful and brilliant character animation as part of the motion design and motion graphics work that the studio does. So Chad and Justin were a great opportunity to talk about a variety of issues in and around the subject of character animation, and we got some absolutely terrific insights from these two guys, and it was fun hearing their kind of different points of view and how they and the other artists at the studio work together. So enjoy this really fun conversation with Buck's Chad Colby and Justin Laws. Okay, Chad Colby and Justin Laws, thanks so much for talking to us today. We really appreciate it.
Of course, no problem. Thank you for having us.
All right, cool. Well, let's kind of start like right at the beginning. We'll start with you, Chad. How did you get into character animation? What was kind of your hook into doing character work?
Well, I like growing up, it was that patented or just the classic, always loved Looney Tunes.
Sure.
Whatnot. And
yes.
all types of animation and comics and such. So after just always loving that and drawing them over and over again, I went to Edinburgh University. It's in Pennsylvania.
Wow.
Yeah, and they had in Pennsylvania.
Not in Scotland. Europe. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
I started to hear bagpipes.
Small town Pennsylvania.
Okay.
So, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Then after that, yeah, just went there and then moved to, after graduated there, they just had like a hand drawn and stop motion program.
Okay, cool.
So I did that. Yeah. And then moved to New York City and then started working in motion graphics.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So you sort of originally started doing more classical, but then plunked yourself into motion graphics. That's an interesting path.
It was interesting. Yeah, I was like, I ended up coming here. I knew I wanted to move to New York,
mm-hmm.
and then once I got here, then I found motion graphics, and then started working in that for a bit, and then later on deciding like, you know what, kind of liked character animation.
So, yep.
So then I went back to, I did some online schools.
Oh, cool.
And then did that and then started working. We had a little friend pop in and say hello. Once I finished the online schools, I was full-time at Buck during that. Am I going on too much about this?
Oh, no. This is what we're here for.
Okay. And I was full-time at Buck then. And then started doing more character jobs at Buck.
Okay.
And yeah.
Oh, that's great. Great. So was that Animation Mentor? Do you mind naming the school?
Yeah, it was Animation Mentor. I did the whole school.
Yeah, right.
And afterwards I went back and I took a refresher course at Anim School.
Okay.
Kind of like, I don't know, it's kind of nice having online courses, I believe, like, because you can just go and like get a good critique by a good person that's in the industry.
Sure.
And
kind
of, like, keep fresh, and I feel like it's good to keep stretching yourself and keep trying.
Yeah, well, that's why we're doing what we're doing for sure. So yeah, agreed. Yeah. So that's great. So when you went to Animation Mentor, did your kind of classical background doing hand drawn and stop motion, did that help you, do you think? Did it give you a little bit of a leg up, do you think?
You know, it's interesting. I've thought about this.
Yeah.
So, when I didn't know, I didn't prepare well enough, I think, for Animation Mentor. I should have done a little more Maya, like just took a little, like, been a little more proficient with Maya. But when I went into it, I feel like the people that had a good background in Maya, at first they were excelling, because I feel like a lot of people were still getting comfortable with the program.
Sure.
But then at the end of the course, I feel like the people with a more traditional background could pose the characters better.
Yeah.
Have more better understanding of gesture and acting and timing and stuff like that. So then I felt like at the end it all kind of like everybody kind of caught up.
Sure, sure. Yeah, that's cool. That's awesome. So you're able to just kind of transition right back to Buck, but now bring this new tool set to what they were doing, right?
Yeah, I did the classes when I was full time.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of like that time was pretty rough. It was like a lot of late nights, like going to work, coming home and animating.
Wow. Until
two or four in the morning and getting up and doing it all over again.
Crazy.
I put on some pounds. Yeah. I was sitting down at the computer.
Sure, sure. Yeah, yeah. That's amazing. That's amazing. Yeah. That's great. Well, Justin, how about you? How did you end up at Buck? What's your background?
Yeah, so I think I have more of a classic motion designer story because I talked to a lot of people and their stories, and basically in like ever since I was a kid, I've been making videos. So like in middle school, I grabbed a video camera and was like shooting and editing with friends. And then I talked to a lot of other people in the industry, and it seems like half the people have made skate videos. Like they just they're like doing skate videos, and then they wanted to put cool titles on them. So they like slowly discovered After Effects. But that was a pretty similar for me. I mean, I was shooting and editing up until like senior year of high school, and then I wanted to animate some stuff, so I was messing around in Flash, but I didn't really know what Flash was, so I was like motion tweening in there and all that stuff.
Okay.
and then basically like literally just one day my friend was like, hey, you should check out this After Effects thing, I've been playing around with it.
And yeah.
He was always making really cool lightsaber videos and all that stuff. And he made some sweet lightning and After Effects.
Sure.
So I pulled that up, and then it kind of just spiraled from there. So I did the classic, like, doing all the Andrew Kramer tutorials, which is like everybody was doing those at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a bunch of that. And for like my like senior year project,
were you in high school then?
Or this was in high school.
In high school, what a go getter!
Wow.
Right?
Senior, wow,
senior,
that's amazing.
High school, I did one of these like kinetic typography things that were really popular then.
Sure. I didn't even know what kinetic was. When I was in high school.
So I did one of these, and it turned out kind of cool, and I got. Got like best in show at the art show, and it was whatever, but I didn't finish by the end of the year, but I liked animating so much that like once I graduated, I kept animating through the summer because like I wanted to finish that piece.
Yeah.
And then basically my friend who's 2 years older, Ian Sigmund, actually, I don't know, you've probably seen his name around. He had already been freelancing a little bit. He had more experience. So he gave just that one video to this little studio. Grew up in Michigan, so it was like a little bit outside of Detroit. So he gave this animation to them. They thought it was cool, so they brought me in for an internship. I was going to school at the time, just like community college. But I don't. That's as far as I got. So I did one semester of college, and in the middle of that, I got an internship at a little studio. Doing just pretty much all After Effects stuff.
Yeah.
So, which was crazy, because I was really young, and I was animating stuff for like the Detroit Auto Show that for these like massive screens, and it was pretty horrifying. but at least in the area, there really weren't that many animators, so it kind of worked out for me.
Sure. Sure.
So yeah, from there, I kind of just like worked my way up through internships and small jobs. And then after probably 3 years working in Michigan, I knew I wanted to move to New York too. So, and looking at Motionographer, you check the job posting, and it's like Chicago, New York, New York, New York, New York. like, well, that's probably where I should go then.
Yeah, 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 cool.
So then I just winged it, and I literally just, I looked at like all the top studios and the places that I wanted to work and just applied for internships, or if they didn't offer one, I just applied for a job.
Yeah.
So I sent like 5 or 6 emails at the time, and it really not that many. And I didn't hear much at the time. And then within 1 week, I had a friend that was working at Vimeo, and he got me a phone interview with them. So I thought I might end up working for Vimeo, just being like their video guy.
Sure.
And then like 3 or 4 days later, Bucky emailed me like 5 or 6 months later, that I emailed them.
Wow.
And that was it. So that basically they offered me an internship. I moved out here pretty quick.
Yeah.
And took that, did the 6-month internship, and then got hired. So great. I've been at Buck the whole time that I've been in New York.
Oh, that's cool. That's awesome. Well, great, great place to land. That's an awesome place to end up. Holy crap. Yeah. So you never actually studied character. You kind of taught yourself MoGraph stuff. How did you kind of start getting involved in character work there at Buck?
Even
just a little.
Yeah. I mean, there's always character stuff going on. And at Buck, a lot of the people here are generalists, in a sense that we kind of like, not many people specialize in one thing. So right. You kind of have to be able to jump around if you need to.
Right.
So there's always going to be a job where like we don't have the resources to hire a bunch of character animators. So it's kind of like that's half of it is just needing to pick it up. Like
yeah.
It's always just like, do you think you can do this? Yeah, I'll figure it out. And then you go figure it out.
Yeah. So, oh, that's great. That's kind of how it works. Well, and you've got character animators around you, so I imagine that helps too.
Oh yeah, totally. Especially like for a reference and ecology and that kind of stuff. Yeah.
So you get your own little tutors right around you there, which is got to be pretty nice.
Yeah.
So,
getting feedback from them is huge.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you feel like your other animation work has improved or changed from learning character? Has it taught you more than you knew before? Has it been broadening, that kind of thing?
Yeah, totally. There's a lot of similarities, but there's also a ton of differences. Where I think one of the main ones is that like I'm so used to animating, you know, like very graphic design based, just making squares and simple compositions, just like really smooth and that kind of stuff. Whereas character animation is a little more involved in a sense that like I feel like there's actual steps and there's like a process you kind of need to know. It's harder to just like kind of just figure it out. It's like I did a lot of that like without learning all the basics, and I was able to figure it out a little bit, but it's once I went and started reading like Animator Survival Kit and all that kind of stuff, or taking tutorials online, that's when it's like, oh, there's like a process to this, and that makes it a lot easier.
sure. Yeah.
I think too, it's like when you're putting limitations on your animation to where you're like, okay, it needs to be based in reality. Like, okay, now physics are involved.
Right.
Now a human skeleton's involved. Like, this is how that happens. I think that's where it starts. That's just where you're all like, okay, no, now I have to make it look like something.
Right.
The fact, like, I can just make this thing look really cool.
Right.
But when it comes down to it, it's still all the same principles, though. The principles of, like, timing and spacing and, you know, like, those, they go back and forth between whatever type of animation you're doing.
Yeah, it's true, isn't it? It's giving life to something, whether it's a logo or a letter form or a character, right? It's all the same purpose in the end, right?
Yeah,
totally.
Yeah,
and it's kind of like too, like when you're doing, well, Justin wouldn't know this because he didn't go to school, but when you are in drawing classes, like you're doing the still life, and you're just like, why do I have to make it look like this? Why do I have to make it look like there? I just want to make my own thing. Yeah. But just the exercise of doing it and learning how to render something, how to draw something, like that's where I feel like if you do the character animation, you can take the stuff and apply it to your different aspects, because it's not just things that are in your head. You're trying to make it resemble something.
Right.
And I actually did forget to mention, like, maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago, I took with a friend, I took a basic drawing for animation class.
Oh, great.
At Pratt.
Sure.
That was mainly because I have like no background in drawing. I was always just playing with computers and doing graphic design and all that kind of stuff. And it really started to catch up to me. Some of the guys at Buck are just incredible illustrators, so you always feel such really bad at drawing when you show up here. But yeah, so I took that class, and it was basic drawing, but it was also like learning how to draw for animation. So
right,
very like gestural and learning poses and all that kind of stuff. That taught me a lot about. I feel like, since I was always so graphic design based, a lot of my attempts at illustration were always just very static characters.
Sure.
Whereas in animation, you're doing these poses of like actions, and that's like something I never really occurred to me.
Yeah, it's very really different way of thinking in a lot of ways. Fundamentals are the same, but there are some real differences in how you got to approach that. So Buck is kind of known partly for the character animation that's done there. How much of the day-to-day work there is character?
I feel like there's at least a couple jobs always going on that involve characters.
Yeah.
But it's, I feel like there are a couple going on, but again, like my downtime, I'm doing something else.
Yeah, sure.
And which for me is actually kind of fun.
Right, right.
Being able to mix it up, being able to go between the two.
Right, sure.
Like we were talking earlier, like experiment. You can experiment in a more MoGraph sense, and then go and try to apply like that timing and whatnot and appeal to the character.
Sure, sure.
Yeah,
that's one of the really nice things about the MoGraph world is it's so diverse. I think it's and it's great to have people with different backgrounds kind of mixing and working together. We were talking about that with Enrique too, that he's got that same situation at Giant Ant where he's got all these different artists and everybody's got different strengths and backgrounds. It's really, really makes the work fun and makes everybody gets to learn from everybody else, which is really cool.
I think that's like going back to like kind of what Justin was saying, like talking about like how he applies it to his work. I think like, I mean, I'm not a designer, but I feel like your job as a designer is to solve a problem, right? And like it's kind of like a lot of times as a MoGraph designer, a motion graphics artist, your problem involves a character.
Yeah.
So no matter what level you're at or whatever, you have to be able to represent this character and represent him moving and represent believability,
right?
Some sort of aspect so that you can, and then you have to know enough in order to get it like to pass or make it believable or a connection.
Right. And you know, do you agree that learning some character, you know, as you're just saying, is pretty good idea for any motion designer because it's a problem you're going to have to solve. Do you think it also just strengthens them overall and makes them better at all of their animation work?
I feel like it's definitely something you should learn the basics of. And then from there, it's kind of like up to you whether how deep you want to go into it. Because it never ends.
That's true.
But yeah, I think, especially like in the industry lately, there's a lot of clients wanting characters, or this is what people are designing lately. It's very popular right now, especially. So you're going to have to deal with it one way or another. So
right.
And the next thing, like, I mean, it is, like he's saying, it is amazing how the industry cycles.
Mm-hmm.
Like right now, it's character. 6 months, we could be having this conversation about stop motion.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And then the thing is, 6 months from then, it's back to character. Being like, hey, that's cool right now.
Lens.
Yep.
Yeah.
So true. So very true.
Yeah.
That, great. Well, Chad, let's dig in a little bit to some of the deeper character stuff here. And how do you approach when you're animating a character? How do you approach creating that performance?
Well, I think I think it depends on like first, like what type of thing you're working on,
mm-hmm.
like how far to push it, like knowing the and also the audience, mm. like just doing. like a buck, say, like working on a fruit snack spot, which is super cartoony Looney Tunes style, and then going and working on a pharmaceutical commercial or an investment banking thing where you just have to have some generic person slowly.
Right.
So first it's figuring out what is the audience.
Sure.
But then I think like more of just diving more into that is just kind of like, I mean, what is the characters like? I mean, you could just go, you're basically just like, right. You can go as far as like this, like on some of the other stuff I worked on, like writing a story, mm-hmm. like knowing the story of that character, like where he's at, like what he's doing.
Right.
And even I think like when you're assigned a shot, if you're working on a spot or working on a film or working on something, like knowing what was happening in the scene before and the shot before and the shot after, where he's going emotionally and emotion wise. Like a lot of it too is like finally just like the story people or the storyboard artists or the designers, they're figuring out the beats of the spot mm-hmm. or the beats of the film, and then it's you figuring out how to hit those beats mm-hmm. and how to sell it and how to make it believable and connecting.
Right.
And entertaining.
Sure, sure. So maybe we can break that down a little. Let's talk about the believable thing. How do you get believability?
It could go a couple ways. Like one, believability is like in saying like you want to make this person look like he could actually be right. there. Or like we were just watching a spot that we did. I don't remember the name of it. I don't know for a lot of name or whatnot. But so it's something like a person on the moon. And then like believability that way, okay, this person's running on the moon. How physicality wise, right. how would it move on the be on the moon? And then another way about believability would be like emotion wise. Like how do you like, okay, this person that I'm supposed to be connecting to and realize that they're happy or they're sad or there's something, how do I connect to them emotionally? Right. So those are the two different types of believability, fit like a physicality and emotion.
Sure, sure. And when you're thinking about that emotional believability, do you think about it like an actor? Do you study acting? Like how do you kind of approach that?
Technically you're supposed mm-hmm. to. Like I know some people get really into that. There's even an online class with Dustin Hoffman now.
Everybody's, wow.
Yeah, exactly. Or like you download his videos and he'll talk about it and stuff like that. But I find for me, like I think too is like a lot of times, like as an animator, I found myself, I don't know if I should be repeating this because I should be like, oh yeah, I totally study acting. I totally do this. I do that. But I think a lot of times it's like you just walking through the actions and seeing what you
right.
do. And you're like, oh, okay. Like, cause a lot of times you're not going to get the shot. You're not going to get a shot in the feature film where it's all peaking in the climax, you need to sell this big emotional part. Like, okay, like going and you're doing this, like how do I do that? Like what are the little nuances and things? What makes me special the way that I pick up this class? Right. What makes me special the way I do this? Or if I'm this person. But then you do that, like okay, if I'm sad. That's how I look at it. Like, okay, the character's supposed to be sad. If I'm sad and I'm going in and doing this, how do I right. do that? And kind of just like walk through it. You put yourself, it's almost like you're acting by yourself, acting through yourself.
Sure, sure. Yeah, yeah, that's awesome.
But then if you read any animation book or go to animation blogs or all the other people are going to be like, no, you really need to study acting and do that, which I think is important. I think it should be, like, you should be doing it. But I think especially when it comes to commercial work or more MoGraph and small term, not so much like feature yeah. film. I think it's just like kind of finding what you do that's important.
Sure.
Or you do.
Sure. And you can study acting by just watching some good Al Pacino movies and stuff, right?
Exactly. Those are those other things. Like you, yeah. I think it is important though to like reference that, watch that, like watch the eye
right.
movement. I like see what people do with their eyes and things like that. Like it's
Yeah, I think the subtleties are like really huge, like in the emotion of character animators, because it's really easy to just be like, oh, I just have to go from this pose to this pose, and you can just animate those keyframes. But like, if there's no like character, like real performance, or like it's like a boring actor who's yeah. kind of just reading
right.
lines. It's a really big deal. It makes such a yeah. difference.
I think too, like what Justin's saying, like on top of that. Is like you're also as an animator, and this is where like I think for me, coming in like as a motion graphics artist, also being a character animator, like finding the way that they'll move. Mm-hmm. So like if you have like Justin saying, instead of going A to B, so this character goes from A to B, but if he's nervous about if he's sitting at a seat and he's grabbing a glass and he's really tired or is really something like, or just kind of defeated, he would just drag his hand up.
Mm-hmm.
He, like lead was, you decide, you make that conscious effort through design, like, okay, he's leading with the hand and the rest of the body is being dragged by that hand or something like that. So it's like finding that lays and designing. I actually was reading something recently about like character animations, like designing the movement,
mm-hmm.
picking those arcs, like designing those arcs, figuring out how they flow and how they move and what moves first and what moves last of the body.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what'll sell the emotion and sell the believability.
Sure. Right.
Chad, I have a question. Like, it's a little more technical, I think, but it's kind of on the same note of figuring out how a character would move. I'm looking at these Fruit Snackia commercials that I know you were the lead animator on. Were you the lead animator on all of them, or just a few of them?
Just a few of them.
Yeah,
but I think I animated on just about all of them.
I remember when they came out, and there were some of my favorite things Buck has ever done because they're so cartoony.
Yeah.
And I'm going frame by frame through. There's one called Airport where you've got the TSA guy grabbing and basically making the little guy puke into his mouth. It's in a weird way. It's like, it's pretty dark. But there's so many movements that are like two frames, one frame. You go from like extreme pose to extreme pose with one frame, right? There's no interpolation happening at all. And to me, that is the biggest difference between what I typically do, what Justin probably typically does, and what a character animator has to think about going from these extremes. So when you were working on those spots, does that sort of style going from like one frame here and then a two frame transition to the complete opposite body shape, is that something you learned, or do you have to experiment and figure that out with each new character that you work with?
I think that style of animation can be applied to like anything. I think it's just choosing that, like that being established by the leads or by the animation director or director on the spot, like really like snappy, because you can figure out, you could apply that anywhere. Mm-hmm. Like you're making that conscious choice that I wanted to be quick and snappy and fun. And I think then there are some spots that was like through that doing that exercise of being like, okay, it is going to be short, quick, and snappy, then you have to like study that and figure out how to do it. Like I know one part where he goes to grab the TSA agent goes to grab Larry, the little gusher. Like I have a snap up to anticipate the movement. So he goes, wah, throws his hand up in the air and then goes down and grab him. Like those were such, but it was basically like one pose, two pose. So when he hits that one pose, like I needed, like it was too jarring, so I stretched the hand and dragged the hand just so it kind of leads your eye so you see it. And then like, okay, like he moved his hand up in the air to anticipate, but it was so broad you needed to be able to, once he hit that pose, then the hand settles, so your eye goes to the hand, you're like, okay, his hand is moving,
right?
And it goes down and grabs him.
Yeah, it's amazing because I'm looking at that frame right now, and that frame out of context makes no sense.
Right.
It's so strange looking.
And it got called out.
Yeah, and this is what's so interesting to me about character animation is that frame is, if you made that, if you didn't have the stretch on his arm in that frame, that move doesn't work as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm wondering, like, because Justin, you know, you're exposed to this sort of stuff all day being around character animators. Because to do extreme stuff like that only lasts for one frame, it's not something that I think most motion graphics, just typical motion graphics artists do. I think it's mostly like, here's a keyframe, 12 frames later is the next one. Let me like grab the speed graph and do something with it. But have you found any of that trickling over into your non-character work?
Well, I think like part of what Chad is talking about is literally just like leading your eye in the right place, which is something you should like absolutely always be thinking about. It's the same thing with motion graphics.
Yeah,
if you
concept.
Have a circle on the bottom left corner, you can't just like snap it to the top right without some way of leading your eye up there. And it's like, you always got to be paying attention to like what the focus should be on the frame. And it's usually one thing. And then there's like some secondary elements that are kind of supporting it. But like Chad was saying, like if that frame wasn't there, it wouldn't lead your eye quite nearly as easy.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I feel like though they do like, they're like Justin's saying, like it is about leading the eye. It is about doing that. And I think it is. I think that concept though of like what you're talking about, like the snappier timing and the snappier stuff, which has been established like in old school cartoons.
For yeah, that's a. Bit.
But I feel like that type of stuff, I feel like could be applied more to motion graphics, like more interesting timing. But the thing is, a lot of the problems that motion graphics are supposed to solve are more exercises dealing with where it doesn't call for that snappy timing. It doesn't call for that. I know you and Sander and whatnot have done a lot of those things where it is kind of like fun, more fun, upbeat, snappier, geometry movement and things like that. Like I feel like it should be. I feel like there are opportunities though in motion graphics to add more texture to the timing rather than just slow eases and eases outs and things like that.
Right. That's one thing that separates the good animators.
Exactly.
Like a lot, and like you guys interviewed Jorge, and like he's kind of figured that out early on, and that's why it just sets his stuff apart so much. And like Phil Boris, same way, and Sander, like they're not just making it smooth, which it's what I fall into a lot because I like things just really buttery smooth.
Right.
But sometimes that can like take the life out of it.
Sure. Yeah, that snappy technique is. That's classic Warner Brothers stuff. The Bob Clampett and Chuck Jones love to do that thing of snapping to a pose over one or two frames with just that tiny little bit of overlap and settle on one little part to keep your eye moving forward. It's really a cool technique. It's fun.
They did that. They did that because they didn't have. They didn't have any.
Right. Yeah.
They couldn't compete. They couldn't compete with Disney doing the full animation. So they sat around and they were like, okay, we're gonna make this good. We're gonna figure out what we have to do to make this good. Like, put our heart and soul into it. And they figured out how to like where to spend
right.
their money.
And it started to really add. What was great is that limitation. They turned it to an advantage and able to really make those the humor came out of that hilarious snap pose, and it's definitely something that set their work apart, I think. And it was fun to see Disney almost copy them years and years later with the Emperor. Got his groove back, and then boom, suddenly there's Chuck Jones Streak Tweens, and I'm like, hey, Chuck Jones, there he is at Disney, like turning his grave probably, but super cool. That's awesome. So I think kind of following up on this, let's talk some more about kind of nerdy wonky stuff here. When you're starting, let's maybe start with Chad. When you're starting a piece of character animation, like say you're given a scene or a shot, and you've got characters got to do X, Y, Z. What's the first thing you do? Do you do research? Do you sketch it out? Do you act it out? What do you do when you're and I get that it depends, but maybe just give some general thoughts about that.
My first thing, I'll look at what was done before and after. Mm. Or see if there's any or just like where, if anything was done, like say like Fruit Snacks or on Peanuts or like any other stuff, you'd be like, okay, what was in the shot before, the shot after, or kind of like get a feel and then be like, oh, okay. And then I'll do a couple thumbnails and just kind of brainstorm and then just show it to everybody. What do you think of this? What do you think of this? Does this read? Does this read? Does this read? And then after that, be like, okay. And it is kind of like just... you're going through that library in your head about like, where have I seen this? So one thing I've been really, really thinking about lately is like, somebody has done this better than me before and somebody has a better idea than me now. And it's like how you find both of those as soon as possible is the most important
thing. Wow. That's like a t-shirt right there. I think.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
I get that tattooed on my stomach.
Yeah, no kidding. That's brilliant.
That's the thing. Like, it really is. I've been having that is one thing that I've been having a hard time with is like, especially when you get stumped too, you just keep it so close to your chest.
Yeah.
You're like, no, I can't. I gotta get it done. And I think it's just getting it out there and talking to people about it and showing it. And I think that the other thing is like, you can take something and you can polish it so much. But you heard that before, like, oh, you don't polish a turd. Or you take it like, well, that idea isn't worth polishing. Like, even if you run out of time, a better idea that isn't executed as cleanly as a bad idea is still a better idea. So, yeah, that's kind of where my head is.
Sure. And it was interesting. I just wanted to follow up. You were using the word read, you know, showing people your thumbnails. Does this read? I thought that was kind of interesting because because we're going to be talking to the students a lot about communicating through poses, which is kind of a new idea if you haven't really worked with character. So is that partly what you're looking for when you're showing them those thumbnails?
Yeah. I think that's, exactly. Like this idea, like, because a lot of times, like even in commercial work and feature work, you're like, you have to go, and what we've been discussing, you have to go from A to B. You have to be like, okay, this is, in order to progress the story, this character is doing this, but this character is feeling this at this point and ending this at this point. And it's like, does that happen? Like, is that happening? And a lot of, you can, and like in your thumbnails or whatnot, and is the action reading? Is the emotion reading? Are the beats reading? Yeah, I think that's, and I mean, to go even, like, if you're getting super studying it and going really into it, is to where, like, every single shot, doesn't matter, like, anything, you can look at it. You can look at any commercial, like, character commercial, any character film, any movie. Every single scene has, like, a goal, a conflict, and a resolution. Mm-hmm. Like, each character has that no matter what you're thinking when you're looking at it. So, like, you can break it down. Like a lot of times they tell you, like, break it down that far.
Right.
But you know, if you got a 26 frame shot and you're just all like, this guy needs to raise his hand out and do that, I'm not thinking about the goal. Sure. I need to move this guy's arm across the screen so I can go home.
That's right.
So, yeah.
Well, I have a question, Chad, on the idea of getting the pose right. You know, one of the things in my limited character animation experience that I always fight with, and I'm sure Justin, you probably agree, is you're trying to get a pose, but you're fighting the rig a little bit. And so this brings up the question of like, how important is it? Like, how important is the rig to what you do? And you know, why don't we use the fruit snackiest stuff as an example? Because I'm assuming those rigs were pretty elaborate. What do you look for in a rig, and if you have a bad rig, does that make your work not as good? And you talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. A good rig you can work quickly in. A good rig costs money.
That's another t-shirt right there. Yeah,
so it's like, what I find is like, if I have a bad rig, I want to be able to have full control over the character, be able to like pose it. It's almost like you're like sculpting the character, like on the fruit snacks, on peanuts and other things. It's like you're literally almost like sculpting that character to hit those poses. So it's like, if you don't have the money to get a really, really good one, then you better just have one that you have full control over and you can get what you want. And then the other thing is like, even if that's not the case, is like, you can still, like, you just pick your battles, just like the Warner Brothers guys do. Just like how you do when you get put on a spot and when you get put on a BP spot and you need to animate this character going up the stairs or doing this stuff, like, you find, it's kind of like you just pick your battles and you go through it. I mean, you need a good rig. Like, you need a rig that makes the character look like he can walk. You know what I mean? Like, right. it bends in the right places. You at least need that.
Yeah.
I think the importance of that, and like you said, like, working quickly is a really big part of it. Like, if you're just struggling to move things around the whole time, then you're not going to be able to put the energy into it. And like as an artist, you're like, your energy is like flowing through your work. That's how it's supposed to be. It's like how painters get into what they're doing and make beautiful paintings. And I've actually learned a lot from Sonder about that too. I don't know if you guys talked to him about him building his own After Effects rigs and that kind of stuff. Like I do a lot of that now too, where I'm in After Effects, I'm building my own tools, whether it's for a character or just a certain way I want these shapes to move around. So if I have a move in mind and it's going to be way too hard to animate everything individually, then I'll build like a simple little tool that'll allow me to animate it a lot easier. It's the same exact thing as building a character rig.
Yeah.
I'm so jealous of those guys and their ability to do that. I just saw, like, I'll come over by Justin's computer. I'll be like, wait a minute, how'd you do that? What is that little slider you got there? He's like, oh, I just, yeah.
Well, it's funny because I talked to Sonder about this, and one of the things we both agreed on was that sometimes doing that is almost like a way of distracting yourself from the creative challenge that sits in front of you, because it's like when you if you can like make a little rig and it works, then you win. Whereas like right. when you know there's not always like a situation where you know you just won when you're animating something. Yeah, and it's such a I've talked about this with you too, Morgan, that animation, especially character animation, it's such a technical thing. There's obviously a lot of art involved, but you're talking about, you know, like software and keyframes and animation curves and all of this like technical
and physics
stuff.
And physics and
yeah,
physiology and
science
and anatomy
computery stuff you need to know. And so I'm curious, you know, and I'll throw this out to both you guys, Chad and Justin, you know, do you feel that that ever goes away and you're just able to just make the thing move the way you want? Or are you always kind of fighting the complexity of the process that we're doing?
I actually think about that a lot because of that problem, which is, since it is such a technical craft, it's part of why I like it, is because I'm kind of just like pretty middle brained, where I'll be coding 1 second and the next I'll be drawing. So, I love that back and forth. But you're right. If it's really fun to like code a tool in it, see it work, and then you're like, great, I did it. But if it's like, but the point of doing that is to get the result you want. So like, I try to treat it where like I'll get deep into that tool and I'll make that tool, and then I just have to like change my mindset. It's like, okay, now we did that so we can animate quickly and like put more life into it. So yeah, for me, it's really just kind of knowing how to flip the switch and turn on your artist brain. And cause like that's really like, all the best animators, that's how they do it. And a lot of the animators that I look up to, they like Sonder is kind of an exception where he can get really technical, but he still really has an eye for animation. And then there's some guys who only have a great eye for animation and they're not really technical, but in my experience, like those guys are still making way better work than the guy that can write a crazy script. I don't know if you've ever opened up one of those Phil Borst After Effects projects, but they're a mess. But it's amazing, right. though. It's like
it looks. Yeah, it doesn't
who
matter.
Who cares if it
mess.
Looks amazing?
Good, yeah.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
I think the only thing to consider about that is like he is from what I understand, he is working a lot alone, so that's fine. But at a place like Buck, we're passing around projects a lot, so like your stuff needs to be clean, and other people need to be able to use it, because otherwise, that's just gonna really screw up the pipeline.
Sure. Sure.
So yeah, that's a big part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, great. Let's talk just a little bit about hardware and software. What, Chad, you mostly use Maya. Do you work with other software as well?
Yeah. No. Yeah, like Maya, After Effects, Flash, Final Cut. I'm a jack of all trades.
And Justin, how about you? What you're obviously an After Effects guy to begin with. Have you gotten into 3D stuff too, or?
Yeah, most of what I do is After Effects. Do a little bit of Cinema 4D. Yeah. That's another thing that's like the industry nowadays. You should at least know how to do basic stuff
sure.
in there. Like no matter what you're doing, whether you want to be doing a lot of 3D or not. And then I know I don't know. Once you've learned one or two programs, they're all so similar. So, you can learn how Flash works in a day.
Sure.
Like all you need to know to do character animation, you can learn that in a day. It's really all the other stuff that's the hard part. And all the classic Photoshop, Illustrator, all the Adobe stuff.
Yeah. Well, and since this is an After Effects based class, let's maybe dish scripts and plugins. Do you guys have any favorites? Any favorite After Effects or Cinema or anything? Any favorite plugins or scripts that you love?
For character or just in general?
For character and or in general.
I feel like we've played with them all because there's always like something new coming out, and we're like, well, let's see if this works any better than the last one. So we're always like trying new things. Like we've used Duik or D-U-I-K.
Yep.
We've used Puppet Tools, mm-hmm. Which is great. It kind of depends like what you need to do.
None of them are there. I don't know. I like them all. I'll sit down and like in theory, they should work. But for me, I just sit down. I'm all like, oh, I'm so confused, or I can't get what I want out of them. But I think they're good. Like they're good. Like I also think it's you can do a lot. Like I think it's picking your battle too. Mm-hmm. Like if you want, like if you know what your character has to do, something simple, then you'd be like, okay, I'll use this script.
Right.
For that, if I want to go in and make a lock cycle and do that, I'll use this one. For me, they're not as intuitive
as
I hope they'd be, but I don't know why.
And for some of the stuff we do, if it's like a medium shot of a character and all you need to do is a pretty simple A to B pose, like we just won't use a script.
Right.
Like,
just
parent it and animate it, and like so a lot of times. We get too caught up in the scripts, and then when I'm just like deleting it and starting over, and it looks better with no script involved. So, but when to like just really simplify it and not even use one. But scripts in general, there's some really cool ones coming out, like Motion 2. Mm-hmm. If you've played with that, that one is just like a giant toolkit of fun stuff.
Neat.
I don't know, a lot of my favorite ones are really simple workflow things, just like being able to set your anchor point by clicking one button, and like keyframe velocity stuff. Like if you can select a bunch of keyframes and type in the keyframe velocity and change those all at once.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's like KVC, keyframe velocity changer.
Wes told me he got that one from you.
Oh, yeah. So I use that one, and then I use like Rift a lot. A lot of the stuff like managing keyframes is huge.
Yeah, right. Yeah, great.
And then even just like, so sometimes I'll accidentally set all my comps to the wrong frame rate. So like there's a script for that to like, just select them all and then change them all back to 30 or whatever, 24 or whatever I need to.
Right.
A lot of workflow stuff. We use this one called immigration sometimes, which if you're doing importing 3D passes, it's a way quicker way to import a bunch of them at the same time, opposed to normally how you have to do that in After Effects is Command I, select one of the passes, import, Command I, select another pass, import.
Yeah, right.
It's like, so immigration, you can just like select them all at once and import.
Nice.
Yeah, just a lot of workflow.
Sure. Have you tried doing any character work in Cinema 4D?
I have
tried to
started
a couple times.
Yeah. I've started to do a little bit of it. Yeah, I know. I don't know many people that actually know it well. I've done some tutorials and I was digging into it a little bit. But then like any like real character animator that I talk to, they're always like, the C4D rigs aren't there yet.
Yeah,
because they're. I guess Maya just does it so well.
Yep. Yeah. I think like it's still pretty much king. Chad, have you tried doing any character stuff in Cinema?
Yeah, they tried to get us to do it a couple times, but it's just kind of like when I feel like when you get to that point with Cinema, it's like for the character things, it ends up it's going to be not really rendered, or just be flat color or something. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Right.
And then you're just kind of like, well, I'd rather just do it in After Effects or Flash.
Right, sure.
if it's going to go more, if it's going to be like a heavily rendered thing, be like, well, it's not going to work with the C4D pipeline, so let's just do it in Maya.
Sure.
And do it that way. So I feel like it's that weird in between. If you're more comfortable with Cinema 4D, I'm sure, and that's your part of your pipeline,
right,
I'm sure you could kill it. What I mean? But like, as far as here, I don't think it's as efficient.
Right. That's a big thing at Buck, is like there has been a lot of thought and like thought and process into creating like the Maya pipeline. Mm-hmm. So like with rendering and all that kind of stuff. Whereas Cinema is a little more free flow here.
Mm-hmm.
So for character stuff, that it's pretty, any 3D stuff is here is Maya.
Right, right.
Partly for that reason, it's just like the way Buck works. I mean, I'm sure there's people doing awesome stuff.
Of course. And like, you know, I think one of you guys said earlier, the tool, in the end, the tool doesn't really matter, does it? It's a, you know, it's about the idea. It's about the quality of the work, whatever tool you're using, right?
Yeah,
totally. And yeah, I mean, and it's like if you end up working at Buck, then you're probably going to learn Maya. I mean, if you want to be doing character stuff, it's just like, because that's how it works here. It kind of depends where you are.
Sure. So. Yeah, absolutely. Well, great. So a lot of great stuff here for our students. Joey, do you have any other questions before we let these guys go?
Sure. I have a couple questions. I have more, but I'll leave it at two. So one thing that always kind of blew me away, and I've heard different statistics, but... I guess, Chad, this would be a good question for you. Like, when you're working on, let's say, the Peanuts movie, how many seconds of polished, finished, approved animation should a character animator be expected to churn out in, like, a week?
Well, Peanuts was a very unique situation.
How so? You gotta qualify that. I'm curious.
It was a little different than like just like your typical feature film, because it's like it's so much you have to match Charles Schulz's original drawings and everything. You know what I mean? So it's very like it was very labor intensive. I found. So I mean, I'd say like a good example is like those fruit snack ones, like the 15 seconds. I think we would animate them in 3 weeks.
So 5 seconds a week.
Okay. Yeah. But that is also like with client revisions. Mm-hmm. But did you hear that? Did you like how I did that? With client revisions.
Yes. This would be such a great industry if it weren't for the clients. Now, how many animators would work on those? I mean, that wasn't like one person doing it in 3 weeks, right?
It was just me.
Really?
Yeah. But just the two characters, and then I mean that's the thing. It depends. Like that one with just two characters, that was fine.
Right.
But then like another one with background things or like more complicated stuff, then we'd have a couple people on there.
And one thing too that I guess will be kind of interesting to some of our students, because you know if you're a motion graphics artist working at a small studio or you're freelancing, you're not exposed to these big pipelines. So when you're animating, you're just animating. You're not lighting, you're not rendering or texturing or any of that stuff, right?
Just animating, yeah.
Gotcha. So just the pure animation part, 5 seconds a week, that's pretty good?
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds like nothing.
I know, right? It's crazy.
Justin, you have a week to make 5 seconds of animation. It's crazy, right?
I mean, sometimes that happens for me. Like if it's just a really crazy shot and it's complex and then have no idea how to do it at first, but the like Chad said, the revision part is a big process, because there are client revisions, but there are also internal revisions like of art directors. Like I'm sure Thomas gives you lots and lots of notes.
Exactly, yeah, also internal notes.
sure.
Right. So how do you manage, what's a good way of managing the revision process in a character piece? Because you know, like when you're doing a sort of more traditional motion graphic stuff, you're going to have changes, but typically you're not talking about hundreds of keyframes the way you might be with a character piece. Well, so is there a more strict process when you're doing something like that?
Yeah, I think it's like, I mean, the cliche, general to specific. And by doing that, like the same thing is like doing those thumbnails, hitting those main poses. If you can get those main poses to read. So like a lot of times what we do is say like the fruit snacks one, say it's like the airport one, for example, minus the intro and the end tag, it's just three shots in the middle there. So what you're doing is like, I'm figuring out what poses tell the story. And then I'll pose that character in those. And once I get that to read, then I'll go in and I'll figure out the breakdown. How does each character get into that pose? And that breakdown from there defines the timing of it. And then once that reads, then it's just gravy.
Profit.
That's a huge thing. I think a lot of people starting out would fall into, which I'm sure I've done it too, is you want to animate a character and you're like, okay, I want him to do this thing. All right, we'll start at frame one and start animating.
Right, yeah.
And that's not a great way to do it. It's not a great way to do a lot of things, whether it's storyboarding a whole piece. Like if you're doing a whole motion design piece, you don't just start like animating from frame one and like hope it all closes up by 15 seconds.
And then it's like, and two, I feel like at the end of the day, it's not what you think. It's not if you think it's good. It's not if you think it's reading. So more importantly is like find out ways to do it, to get your idea across as quickly and as efficiently as possible. And a lot of times it's not like, oh, I got to stay late and work so hard. This. It's like, no, it's like, how do I just make this read and get my idea across? Like sometimes like you'll do a pose of a character. And then I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, oh, I kind of want him to do this. So then you take that pose, you bring it into Flash, and you'll draw over top of it and just show how you're thinking that movement will happen. Because that'll take you 10, 15 minutes as opposed to half a day if you're doing it in Maya. You know what I mean? Like,
that's really smart.
You want to catch the revisions like as early on as possible too. That's like one of the problems we have with clients sometimes is they'll give you notes at the very end and you're like, oh, you could have told me this when we were storyboarding.
And that's what's tricky too, is because you have to think about if you show a client a hand draw, a 3D spot with hand drawn animation over top of it, are they going to get it? Like, so you have to hope that like the people you're working with can hold their hands through it and kind of explain something. Like,
right.
Yeah, you must have some good producers over there, Buck. I'm imagining.
We do. Mm-hmm.
They save our lives every day.
Yeah. I'll bet.
Seriously. I'll bet. So let me ask you guys this. So, you know, this is a character animation course and a lot of the students taking it have literally never attempted to animate a character before. And when you're talking about character animation, I mean, it's like a really, really deep topic. I have the Animator's Survival Kit sitting right next to me right now. It's a very thick book. So if you were to try and just think about like one or two most important things to focus on, what would they be? I mean, would it be posing or would it be follow through or arcs? Like, is there something that, if you get this one thing right, a lot of the rest is forgivable? Is there anything like that? And we can start with Chad and then Justin, you can chime in.
Hey, you put me on the spot, guy.
Yeah, buddy. We can edit out the awkward silence that was. Yeah.
I mean, it's all of them. I think if you're animating a character, the weight is always in the hips. It's something to always think about.
Huh.
Like it's all like just seeing which way the hips are moving. And that's a big one. That's one there. And then I think the weight is in the hips and the emotion and thinking are in the eyes.
That's good.
That's great.
You did very well, Chad.
It's another t-shirt. Answer. I think that's another t-shirt right there.
Hips and eyes. Yeah. No, and I'm going to, you know, Morgan's going to, he's going to extrapolate a bunch of interesting stuff out of that. And in the outro, he's going to tie it all together. So it seems like this was like the goal all along with the interview, which is the, I was wondering if you could just like elaborate on that a little bit more. Cause, you know, the hips, like where the weight is shifting through the hips. I mean, again, exactly. I'm a MoGraph guy, Chad. I don't know what that means. Well, what do you
just said it, like the weight shifting through the hips, like the way the hips are angled shows what side of the body the weight is on, and that's all. And that's important for walks. That's important for how the character's standing.
That's awesome.
You know what I mean? Like if you draw a line from say the, you know, like if you hold when you're doing a figure drawing and you're holding the pencil up and just tilting it to see which way the hips are tilting.
Right, right.
Because that'll show contrapposto. I'm from Ohio, so I'm like contrapposto. So that's that. And then with the eyes, it you can just animate eyes, and you can show somebody thinking. I always think this is totally cheesy, but I always want to animate the scene from Mad Men. Or Don Draper's on the telephone. I would study it or whatnot, and like he's getting a call from the real Mrs. Draper that lives out in L.A. And she died, and he was getting a call from her daughter, and it cuts back to him, and you just see his eyes moving, and just all that he's thinking. There's so much in there, and he said so much without saying a word. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the way that his eyes move around and stuff.
We'll put a spoiler alert before you.
Spoiler alert.
I know what you're talking about. That's why I love the idea of being good at character animation, because you can get a lot more of an emotional response out of it, I think, than the typical, you know, even as beautiful as some of that stuff is, like the geometric shapes doing interesting things, moving smoothly. You get one correct eye animation, and all of a sudden you've made the person feel something. By the way, I have to say this, and I know I won't. I feel comfortable saying it because I know I'm not the only one that didn't know this. I actually never knew why artists hold their pencil out like that, and you just taught me something about drawing. So thank you.
There you go.
That's awesome.
Coming back, like that thing though is like. And if you watch that shot, I think it's season three, season four, like his head doesn't move. Mm. Like his body's not moving. His head's not moving. Sure, he makes himself cry, but he sells this huge emotional reaction just in his eyes. Can you imagine how hard that is? Mm-hmm. Like right now, if you're trying to sell somebody that your dog just died with just your eyes, how hard would that be? Yeah. But he does it. It's insane.
Amazing. That's great.
Yeah, it makes it look easy. So, yeah. Justin, is there anything like that, you know, just kind of the one or two things that you can screw everything else up, but if you get these things right, halfway there, you know, it's like the important stuff. Anything like that jump out to you?
I think like why Chad was struggling with the question, which is the same thing I am, is like all the basics are like really important, like whether it's the hips or like the way the feet hit the floor. But I think the important thing is to kind of just get a general overview of like how all that stuff works, and then go try it. And then you'll be like, oh, that's why this is important. Cause like whenever I tweak this thing, I see that it makes it way better. So it's kind of like, you just start broad and learn a little bit of every little step. And then you like, once you've done a couple of projects or whatever experiments, then you kind of like dig deeper into like, oh, what's it look like if I make the foot hit harder on the floor whenever it does this or whatever. It's just starting broadly.
I think, and what you're saying, if you start broadly and you get an understanding of all of those, or you start broadly and you just do it, you kind of see what happens as you're getting a job and as you're getting put on each spot, each character. The thing is, with motion graphics, each spot you're doing looks totally different than the next one. Mm. So every time you do a new commercial, the character looks different.
Yeah, that's a huge thing. Yeah. Like when I started at Buck, it was going to be like, it was really hard working here, especially trying to work at the level that these guys do here. And I was like, oh, I'll just work here for a few years, and then I'll really get the hang of it. And it's felt the same way the entire time.
You never get comfortable. That's good.
It's like every job is totally different. There's usually at least one thing I've never done before. So and that's like where you should always be too. So
that's what's fun about it, man. By the way, I have to just throw, this has like been such a great interview. You guys are amazing. Yeah. Thank you guys so much.
Yeah, I really appreciate it.
No, thank you.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah.
It's nice to meet you guys.
It was a really fun conversation. A lot of great insights from both of those guys about character animation, I thought. And really exciting that Chad got to work on the Peanuts feature. which has not come out at the time we're recording this, but I'm really excited to see. I'm sure you guys are excited to see it too. So look for Chad in the credits. That's really exciting. And it was very nice of Chad and Justin to try to make us all feel a little better, trying to tell us that people at Buck were just like all the rest of you guys when we secretly know they're really superior. No, I'm just kidding. But truly, Buck does have tremendously good taste in artists, and I think our interview with Justin and Chad proved that as well as anything else could.